Hello and welcome to the ESG Fitness Podcast, live in the Commit to Six group on Sunday at 2 p.m. I don't know why I felt the need to say all of that. I felt like that was the shipping forecast for some reason.
Do you know what? See, when we started making podcasts, what we'd like to do was like provide a bit of context for people listening in the future. I mean, like, this is what here is the news this week. Here's what happened. What happened? Well, I've been watching The Crown. Has anyone else been watching The Crown? I'm absolutely obsessed with season 4 with the royal family.
Please don't tell me anything because I'm starting tonight. I'm going to watch it tonight.
Are you starting season 4?
Oh, you know how much this is like groundbreaking. Like, I don't really watch anything. I'm going to watch The Crown.
I know, this is massive. The amount of times I've been like, Emma, do you watch this? And you're like, I don't watch television. That's for paupers.
Do you know what I did watch this week, because one of my clients was in it, was what? 24 Hours in Police Custody.
Why was your client
no, no,
in
no,
that?
She's like a lawyer on it. Yeah, so this is why I didn't do my check-in, because yeah. I've just been done for smuggling £4 million worth of cocaine into the UK.
That's amazing. Right, okay, cool. Yeah, so I'm obsessed with... I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but if anyone wants to comment below in Facebook and like ask me a question about The Crown, I will answer it.
Do you know the photo you shared of Diana? I was like, that could literally be you.
Thank you.
Biggest compliment ever.
She was an absolute babe, so yeah, I'm really happy with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I did want to start the podcast with a talking point, which mm-hmm. was a message that we discussed from check-ins, and it was kind of about tough love, which obviously isn't for everyone, and a part of the point I wanted to make here is that not every coach is for everyone, which is also why it's brilliant that I've got Andy and Shona, and that, you know, if you want someone who's takes a slightly different approach, then you can use these guys, and we all have like very good knowledge. I'm just gonna put it out there, we do, but everyone's approach is slightly different, and what motivates one person will probably completely turn off another person. And equally, if you try to please everyone, you end up dulling your message down so much that it's basically just so bland and boring that you'll motivate no one with it. So I think it is important that you don't change too much, but I do think that some of the things that potentially I've said on the podcast in the last week have been taken in the wrong way, or maybe not in the wrong way, like I'm gonna take responsibility for this, and maybe I've said them in the wrong way, or they've resonated with someone in a way that I didn't expect them to or wouldn't want them to. And I think one of them was about being jealous of, so if you see someone in amazing shape and you're jealous of that, I was saying that that's because you know you could achieve that, and I don't think that's always the case. That's not always why someone is jealous of someone else, and a prime example of that is injury. And like, I experienced that massively. So I don't mean to come across in a way that's unsympathetic to that. Like, every time I open Instagram, I'm triggered by someone who's working out, and I'm so jealous of the fact that they get to work out. Like, and that's not, there's nothing to like do with that feeling really, which is why I don't really speak about it a lot, because I don't think that that's particularly useful to people. Whereas being able to reframe that as a positive, if there is something you can do. Were you going to say something?
Yeah. So what would you actually say, because I've been thinking about it as well, is would you actually say that it's actually the opposite? So feeling jealous or demotivated by seeing someone else's progress is because you actually can't feel like you can't do that right now because of injury. So you can't do like a heavy back squat right now because it's just not going to be good for you. And maybe you feel like it's just not something that is ever going to be possible for you. I mean, that is the case for some back injuries, and that might demotivate you for that reason. However, if you were like, your back was totally fine and you saw someone back squatting heavier than you, and you could do it and you could potentially easily build up to that in time, you wouldn't feel jealous and demotivated.
I think that nails it perfectly. It is completely dependent on the context, and I think sometimes I'll say something and someone will take it as, if you're jealous, it means this. And that's absolutely not the case. There are obviously reasons why people can't do things. And similar was true with the podcast I did on being overworked.
Yeah.
Where, do you know what? Genuinely, some people are overworked. 100%. Mm. My main point about that was that the majority of people I see sharing that tweet were not overworked. They're like, you know, I don't know, maybe like Instagram-y people who are posting up a couple of pictures a day and think that that means that they're overworked. And really, they just haven't switched off. Now, I 100% agree that there are people with very high stress jobs that probably are overworked and that don't have that same flexibility. I think the point I was trying to make is that that message resonates with people who want to feel overworked, and that a lot of the time they aren't. They're just looking for an excuse to take a break. And my main point at the end was that you don't need an excuse to take a break. You don't need to be burnt out in order to say, I want to have a couple of days off. You don't need to legitimize that. You can just say, I want to have a couple of days off. And I think this is especially true for personal trainers or anyone who's self-employed or works for themselves, is that there's this pressure to keep working. And it's like, okay, let's take a step back. The reason that you probably became self-employed, or at least a huge part of that, was likely because you wanted flexibility. You wanted to be able to take time off. And now you feel too guilty to take time off. Mm-hmm. Or you feel bad that you're taking time off while other people are working because you don't work the normal 9 to 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my point. But I think that could have been easily misinterpreted as well.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you're self-employed, it's and especially if you're on Instagram and you're surrounded by other people that are self-employed, it's really hard. And it's really easy to get a completely skewed sense of what hard work is, or what like a sensible amount of hours. And I think we were talking about it with Taryn, because she is really, that's what it was. She had a question about how she's in the same sort of like industry as us, and she's finding it really hard to put herself first. So she's given everything to her clients. She's multiple hours of whatever PT a day. And then when it comes to the end of the day, she's too tired to do her own training. She's too tired to do her own steps, or like even focus on herself. And I think every single personal trainer does that at some point in their journey. I've definitely done it. And because you're just so focused on like building. And I've got a couple of points to make on that. First point is that if you're not training or looking after yourself or like walking the walk, just talking the talk, then I just don't think that you have as much credibility as a trainer. And second of all, when you're a PT, a lot of people think to make more money and be more successful, you either do more hours or charge more. And then at some point, you can't do either of those things. So what I said to Taryn is that she needs to work smarter, not harder, and become an online coach like us. Well, last night I was replying to a check-in in the bath.
Living the dream.
Living the online coach dream.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, do you know what's funny? The reason that Taryn first got in contact with me was to help her with her online coaching.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she is moving to online coaching. But yeah, you're right that you can easily become burnt out if your only way to progress in your business is working more or charging more. Mm. And then there becomes a ceiling for that, because you're charging for your time as opposed to for your like coaching ability. If you can find a way that you're not charging just purely for time, then that's going to enable you to scale on a sort of business perspective anyway.
Yeah. But I think we should talk about the tough love thing again, because I mean, I generally don't really react. Like, I've had so many coaches throughout my life, and I find that if I get some like tough love, some harsh words, instantly I'm like, I don't react well to it in that moment. Like, I love encouragement and love and gentle words, and Shona, you're doing so well, just a wee bit more of that. But that actually doesn't work, because it keeps me complacent. And then if I get that tough love in the moment, I'm like, fuck you, what a rude bitch, whatever. And then I go away, I sit with it, and I'm like, well, maybe actually there's a bit of truth there. And it tends to be, if something hurts or it stings, it's because that you recognize that there is some truth there. They're speaking directly to you, and that you do need to sit with it and act upon it.
I think you're right, but I think there's two sides to that. So I think in this situation where it's like, actually I'm injured and I can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, I can always look for other things to do. And we've spoken about like working around injuries a lot and the mindset behind that. But I think sometimes it stings because you're like, actually in my position, it's not just about trying harder. It's actually about the fact that I can't do X, Y, and Z. So we're not, like, I didn't mean to be insensitive to that, if that's what did happen. And then it's interesting that you mentioned that, like, you like the, I guess, the less tough love side. Because I think I'm motivated by the opposite.
Are you?
And when someone gives me too much encouragement, I become completely insensitive to it. So if I have a check-in and, like, this never happened with Andy, surprisingly enough. But if I have a check-in and it's always like, oh my God, babe, you're doing amazing. You're the best thing ever. But, like, at some point I'm just like, that's like white noise to me now. Like, you say that I'm doing amazing every week, but actually I've not made that much progress. So am I doing amazing every week? And I remember more from athletics, like, I used to have a coach who would never, ever say anything nice. And then now and again, like, all he would say is, that was a good race. And, like, that, then you'd know, like, that would be like, wow, that's like the biggest compliment ever. Whereas I've had coaches before who were like, oh, you did amazing. And it's like, I came last, like, I didn't do amazing. But sometimes you're right that, like, you do need that pick me up. And I think part of the skill of a coach is knowing, well, first of all, like, as a coach, you won't resonate with everyone. That's just a fact. But secondly, being able to change to what your client needs. So even with working with you, like, I knew there were times where you did need a bit of tough love, and there were other times where you really didn't need that, and that might have just pushed you over the edge and just thought, do you know what, what's the point in any of this? So it's being able to read that as well. And part of that, and a lot of that, is on you as a client to share what you need, and maybe not directly saying, I need some tough love, or I need a bit of encouragement here. But even just, not just writing in a check-in, like, this is what I did, but elaborating on it a little bit. Like, the more information you give us, the more we can give back. So if you say, I didn't hit this because I'm struggling with this, this, and this, or I can't figure out why I'm not doing this, and I'm feeling X, and I'm really tired, but I don't, you know, whatever it is, like, if we have more information to go on, then we can help coach you better. And we can probably tell if you just need a kick up the bum, or if you need a little bit more encouragement and a little bit of love and reassurance. Because I think reassurance is really important as well. And I've had that a bit this morning with a few clients who are a little bit worried about, one of them building and worried about weight gain. And all they needed was, oh yeah, that's totally normal. Like, don't stress about that. I expected this to happen. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the process. And that's all it needs. It doesn't need to be more than that. But reassurance is really important as well.
Yeah, totally agree. There was a question just from what you just said there about weight gain. Who was it that asked the question? She was like, she's so stuck in the mindset of, like, always dieting. And
So we briefly touched on this on the last podcast, but I want to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, okay.
So it was Kat Ware, I think, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And it was more about, I think, what we were going to discuss anyway, was this notion that you need to have lost all of the body fat before you then deserve to be able to build muscle. Or just that fat loss needs to be your goal, full stop, at any point, at any time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the goal.
Do you not think that's such a narrative for all women? Like, we're told to be really tiny and really small, and how dare you want to be bigger and stronger and take up space? And, like, how often do men have that feeling about their own training? Like, men just want to, like, bulk up and get stronger and get bigger, but why are we not allowed to do that? And yeah, there was so much, like, the way she said it, she said, I felt like a fraud. What was it she said?
A fraud. Felt like
a fraud. It's like, bloody hell, like, we are so allowed to get big and strong. And if a client comes to us, because, you know what, this is actually something that I used to think when I came to a coach, is that I would come to a coach and be like, I want to get strong, but I'm not actually that lean right now. And that they would be like, no, you need to get really lean first before you start to build muscle. But actually, in the state that you are, if you're not, like, shredded, you're probably in a much better place to get super strong and build loads of muscle.
This is something we talk about all the time on EIQ as well, is not projecting your own experiences or your own beliefs onto someone else. And what's kind of annoying is, well, not annoying, but you need to be really careful of it as a coach, because your clients almost ask for it. So that's basically what Kat was asking, and she asked almost the same in her check-in this week as well, was, do you think I should be doing this? Should I do this and then I should do that? Or like, should I lose fat and then build muscle? Or I feel good right now, but should I lose a bit more? We can't say what your goals are. Like, the only time we'll step in is when we're like, you're too lean. Or on the other end of the spectrum, which is completely unlikely, but you know, you're now obese, for example. Mm-hmm. At those two ends of the extreme, we would be like, I think it's time we change our goal here, or we rein things in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But anywhere in between that, like, your goals are yours, and you come to us saying, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to achieve, and we back you and get behind you and set you, making sure that you're putting in the effort that's going to get you closer to those goals in the right places. But that's an interesting point about like becoming bigger, and I think there's quite a lot of internalized like sexism there. That even, like, I would say my mum is, like, borderline... Well, no, she's a feminist, for sure. But she would still say to me, like, oh, you don't want to get too big. Or, like, you don't want to get... I mean, obviously, I'm very close to getting too big. But she would always say things like that to me when I first started lifting weights. Oh, you don't want to, you know, build too much muscle, or get... How strong do you really want to be? Or... And it's, she would never have said that to my brother, I don't think.
No, definitely not. If your brother wanted to get big and strong and be massive, then that's totally fine. But yeah, we're just not allowed to be big and strong and loud and all these sort of masculine traits. And like, I was obsessed. I remember being obsessed when I first became a PT with being tiny. I just wanted to be like this little tiny, fragile, like skinny arms, skinny legs. And my goals now have completely flipped. Like, I remember... Like, I had a coach and I dieted down, and I just felt so weak. Like, I couldn't do any of the cool stuff that I wanted to do. I was so shit at CrossFit. I was maybe quite good at burpees and pull-ups, but it's not very glamorous. Like, I couldn't lift heavy. I just didn't feel powerful and strong, and I love now feeling like that. Like, you cannot take that away from someone. You have to put the work in to get that. And it doesn't come with being little and fragile and like a little bird. I love
little baby sparrow.
Like a little tiny, delicate baby bird. But I think
so much of that translates into, like, I mean, we are only talking about this physical, oh, how much you can lift. And some of you, I mean, like, for example, for myself, like, I might be thinking, I'll probably never be able to lift very heavy. But it's not just that. It's more like the mindset behind building strength.
Yeah.
That, okay, I'm bettering myself. I'm seeing the amazing things my body can do rather than seeing how much I can restrict myself and how small I can get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a time and a place, if you've got a lot of body fat to lose a bit of body fat. But it's actually quite short-lived, especially if you do it right and you do it once and you're not yo-yo dieting for the rest of your life. Yeah. Then you can move on to the next goal, which might be, cool, let's see what my body can now do. And that's way more exciting.
And also takes so much more time. Therefore, it's so much more rewarding when it comes. Like, that's something that I've been talking about in my check-ins. Like, someone was asking how long can they expect before they see progress, like, in building muscle and gaining weight. And I'm like, we've done 4 weeks. No, you pretty much won't see any progress. If you were focused on fat loss, yes, you would see progress. But building muscle, it's going to take ages. Like, Emma and I have been lifting for years. Emma's been lifting for way longer than I have. And you're still building muscle, aren't you? Like, you're still getting stronger and building muscle. So it does take years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Okay. This is a point that I wanted to touch on that came up in check-ins. Someone was, I don't know how to contextualize this. Basically, they're getting brilliant results doing 3 workouts a week. And they're thinking, oh, maybe I'll add more. And my point was, like, so she's getting really good results. She's managing 3, but she's also, you know, a busy mum. She's studying and she's got a job. And you're like, what's a good way to think about this is, what's the opportunity cost of doing an extra session? Does that mean less time with my family, more stress because I'm trying to fit in everything, less time studying, for example, when at the moment it seems like you've got really good balance and you're getting results? And actually, we know from the law of diminishing returns that doing 3 workouts is great, but doing 4 is probably going to add very little extra benefit to that. And for the opportunity cost of that, is that worth doing? And will that just mean that you're setting yourself off and I get 4 workouts and I've failed? And then you're like, well, I've not hit 4, so I may as well not do any. Or I know I won't fit 4 in now because it's Friday, so I'm just not going to do any. Like, are you now putting yourself in that like perfectionist mindset?
Mm.
I would say just because, you know, it's been 2 weeks, you're getting good results, you're in a good routine. I think a lot of the time, especially when it comes to check-ins, it's like, right, okay, so what do I need to change for the next check-in? Sometimes nothing. Like, if you don't need to change anything, that's the best check-in. That means you're already doing it really well. It's just consistency.
Yeah.
And sometimes what trips people up is them thinking, right, what's next? I need to add in something else. I need to drop my calories. I need to do this harder. I need to do this better. When actually you're already doing really well. So that's something to consider if you're checking in and thinking, I need to do more for the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not always the case. And sometimes that's where you trip yourself up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree with that. I mean, if there is something that you want to do, you could always like lift slightly heavier in your 3 sessions, or maybe be a bit more intense, shorten the rest. But it sounds like this person's doing really well, and why change it?
Yeah,
don't fix what's working. Absolutely.
Have you got any more questions?
I'm literally just scrolling through just now. Lots of questions about whether, sort of, like, I'm just paraphrasing because I've had like 3 or 4 questions about it. Should you increase your steps or increase the number of workouts that you do if you want to increase your activity or increase like fat loss?
Oh, great question.
Yeah, I've had that quite a few times because obviously people are thinking, right, what's next? Getting progress. Want to keep it going. But yeah, something that Emma has said recently, I think you answered it in a question, is think about your workouts as what you do to build muscle, and then think about everything else as what contributes towards fat loss. So if you're wanting to build more muscle and get stronger, add in a workout. If you're wanting to increase the fat loss, increase the steps. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to think about it. And I'd also, if you're already doing, say, like 4 workouts a week, and you're adding another one, you could potentially be not recovering well enough. So potentially just upping your steps is going to be something that's better for fat loss and a little bit easier, and means that you're still recovering optimally from your workouts. The other thing is we tend to massively overestimate the amount of calories burnt in a workout in comparison to the amount of calories we burn just being active throughout the day. So if you could increase your steps by 3,000 extra steps, that's going to do you probably better than if you try and add in another workout. And remember that like the whole idea behind workouts is building muscle, and there's so many health benefits to exercise. I don't even see calorie burn as one of them. Like, if I had a list of things, it would be like way down at number 10 or something. Oh yeah, it also burns extra calories. Like, it's not the primary reason that we should be working out. And I think people mistake that, and they think, oh, that's the best way to burn calories is to exercise. Actually, to get active outside of that and throughout the day is a much better way to do that. So I would say if you can increase steps. If you're already, let's do like as a sort of general rule, if you're already doing 4 workouts a week, then increase steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a friend who has like one of these, I think it's called a Whoop. Have you heard of the Whoop?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So is that the one that measures your strain?
Yeah, it goes off like heart rate variability, I think.
Is that one more accurate? For calorie burn?
It might be a little bit. What's quite annoying, and I looked into this a lot for EIQ, is that most of the algorithms they use or like the calculations they use are private. So like Apple won't they won't release exactly how they get from the data that they have to the number that they're spitting out on the calorie calculator. So all of them are slightly different. I think one of the reasons might be because it is much more accurate when you take in heart rate data. But I think that some watches measure heart rate but don't use it to calculate calories because it's a more complex thing and because you'd have to do it ongoing
Heart
rate changes. And I think one of the reasons they're so inaccurate is that your watch often doesn't really know what you're doing for most of the time.
Right.
Which is why you normally have to tell it, oh, I'm working out now. Or like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going for a cycle or whatever. And it will, yeah. Basically, they're not accurate. All the reviews, so we looked at like 4 different review papers. All of them showed that they're accurate for measuring steps, or at least consistently inaccurate, which I think is basically it's just as good, let's be real. And that they're not accurate for energy expenditure. And what I mean by consistently inaccurate is that I think it was Scott Baptey actually that put up on his story that was showing his Fitbit measured like 2,000 less steps than his Apple Watch or vice versa. And it's like, it doesn't really matter, does it? Like, it's no. As long as it's consistent. If it's consistently inaccurate, then we have a baseline from which to change from. Mm-hmm. That's all we need. So we know that if you're doing 10,000 steps, but really it's 12,000 steps, it doesn't matter, because if we wanted to increase energy expenditure, we'd just bump that up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when it's just random and inconsistent, which is what seems to be the case for calorie expenditure.
Yeah, I was training with a friend last week before lockdown, and we were doing the exact same workout, and it was quite a hard workout, but I think like it wasn't like a massively long one. How long was it? Maybe about 25 minutes. And his strain whoop thing said that he'd burned 700 calories, and he was so proud of himself. He's like, I've just burnt 700 calories. I was like, babe, I'm really sorry. I don't think you have.
No. But what you probably have done is massively improved your fitness.
Like, yeah, or not.
Built, you know, stimulated growth for a lot of muscle and you know, all
because
these things.
Didn't do all of that. I just was like, babe, no, you haven't.
You've not done.
Shall we go through another question?
Yes.
This one is probably going to resonate with a lot of people, because as we get closer to Christmas, I think everyone's jobs are like getting more intense. You're working longer hours. It's pretty stressful. Okay, so here we go. Hi, I teach BTEC sport. That's quite identifying. I'm really sorry. Are we meant to keep these questions anonymous?
No, I don't think anyone's going to care.
Okay, Bronwyn.
It's like, please don't say, you know, like, unless it's like very personal. Had a breakup with.
Yeah. By the way, please keep this anonymous. Oops. Which means, okay, so she teaches BTEC sport, which means I have a lot of coursework to mark, mostly on weekends. My question, do you have any tips for how to take breaks? I am asking this because I work from home every Wednesday, and between that and the weekend of marking, I've become attached to my laptop and time is irrelevant, thus low steps and calories are lower and protein is low. So I thought that was a great question, because I mean, like, literally everyone's going through things like this. This sounds exactly like my weekend as well. So every fortnight, I've got, well, same with Emma, we've got over 40 check-ins to reply to, and I'm sort of spreading them out over the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Maybe some will like move into Monday, but I'm doing my best to get them all done. And the first week I had such a numb bum, because I'm not used to sitting down all day. Like, being an online coach is relatively new for me. I was an in-person coach before then, so I'm used to being on my feet, and I've just got a wooden chair. So what I was doing was like replying to 5 and then having a break, and the break would literally be like 10 minutes, but I would get up and walk around. But then even just like sitting for 5 was really sore in my bum. So what I did was put my computer and my keyboard on a yoga block and then stood and replied. So just standing and being on the laptop or the computer. Was
I'm on my standing desk now.
Are you standing?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, I'm sitting. But yeah, it's such a good idea. It's so simple. And it's I think it's really easy for us to say set boundaries. It's really easy for us because we're our own boss. But see if you had like a boss that was like, you need to get this done right now. Because I think like right now there are no boundaries. Like, people are getting emails last thing on a Friday night, first thing on a Sunday morning, and it's so difficult, especially when like there's some people might think their job's on the line right now. People are being made redundant. You can't set those boundaries. So how would we get around that one, Emma?
I think still setting yourself those boundaries, but I know what you mean, because I think previously I kind of always work the weekend, especially because it's when I do check-ins.
Yeah.
But I would, I don't know, maybe email someone and I wouldn't expect anything back from Monday. But I have noticed that more and more people are just like replying straight away, or they're like, oh, yeah, let's do a Zoom call. And I'm like, but it's Sunday. And they're like, oh, yeah, it doesn't really matter. There's not a weekend. So I think still setting yourself less so weekends, like every day is a bit the samey, but certain times where you're going to switch off. And part of it's purely because, like, I'm so glad to hear you're doing that as well. But I know from check-ins that if you do more than, say, five in a row, your reply is not going to be as good.
Exactly, yes.
And I noticed it, there's the a same difference with marking.
I noticed there was, like, my sympathy was drying up.
Yeah, and that's exactly when you need to take a break.
Yeah, So that's bad. Like, I need to have the same amount of sympathy for person number one as person number 20. So that's why I was like, right, I need to go, like, do something nice for myself, come back, like, have a nice Shona face on so that I'm ready to be like, hello. So yeah, it's really important just so that you do a really good job, because if you are fatigued, grumpy, sore bum, you're not going to do as good a job as you would if you had a little rest.
And actually, like, each check-in is kind of trying to get in the headspace of that person and what we know about them and potentially how long we've been working with them, and we know that they've got this, that and that going on, or they're also marking coursework for their BTEC in sport, or, you know, whatever it is. So we're getting in that headspace of them and how we can best help them. It that takes quite a lot out of you. You can't just, like, flick through each one time. So, I think taking a break is really important for productivity, if not just to, you know, get your steps up and things. And if you can, like, I sometimes used to do, like, a set of pull-ups, a set of push-ups between, like, every check-in, just to... Maybe not for 40, right? But, you know, if it was like a morning, I might do that just to break things up. Or, there's loads of little things you can do. But I think making sure that you do take a check-in is going to... take a break is going to massively improve the quality of your work.
Yeah.
And like you were saying at the start, like, work smart, not hard. Just because you've been sat at the computer for ages. And I've noticed this as well. If I... like, turn my phone off, turn off my notifications, and I'm just like, I'm going to do an hour of check-ins, I'll get loads done. Whereas if I still have everything on and I'm trying to also update something else because I'm waiting for my PT Hub to load, for example, and then I start doing something, like, it takes me five times as long to do the same amount of work. So, kind of what I was getting to with the point of you're not overworked, sometimes that you're just trying to do too much at once and not doing anything particularly well. So, you know, make a plan at the start of your day and be like, these are things I need to do, these are the things I can put out of my brain until tomorrow, and they'll get done tomorrow or they'll get done later on. And these are the breaks I'm going to take, and this is what I need to focus on. And if I get finished early and I still feel motivated to work for another hour, then I can look at my list of things that are, like, second priority to do and try and tick some of them off.
Yeah,
that's probably what I'd do.
Yeah, I think you're so right. And especially if, like, your phone's there, you get an email from a client. While you're replying to the email, your client, you also get a WhatsApp through from, like, your group chat. You're like, right, okay, I need to reply to that. And then you get a notification from Instagram. So you go onto that and you check that. And I think, like, turn your notifications off, or maybe close down apps. I've got this thing that I've just discovered, which probably everyone knows about already, and I'm just behind. You can set a limit for how long you are on each app every day. So I set my Instagram for an hour, and then after the hour, it says your time's up, and it gives me an option for one more minute or 15 more minutes or ignore. And I'm never going to press ignore. I'll press one more minute, and then I'll be like, right, okay, that's enough. And that's such a good one.
I think even it just reminding you that, like, even if you're like, actually, I need to do a post today, I'm going to put 15 more minutes up. Like, you've had to actively say, I'm going to do more right now. I think that's quite a good tool.
Yep. Yes. I've just thought of another question that was good that came through. Oh, yeah. So there's been quite a few people who started to commit to six, and then halfway through commit to six, something massive has happened in their life that's, like, thrown a spanner in the works. So whether it's, like, they've had an injury, or they're moving house or getting a new kitchen, or they've had to get, like, scheduled surgery, and they're really irritated that this is happening right in the middle of commit to six when, like, everything was going so well, and now there's a challenge in the way, and they just feel like they can't quite do what they were doing in commit to six and it's very frustrating. Because I had a check-in from someone and they were like, oh, I'm doing so well, I'm really frustrated, I won't be able to do as many workouts this week because she's getting an injection in her back. But what she'd, I was really impressed with, what she'd actually said is, right, so this is what I'm going to do after I get my check-in. After I get my injection, I'm going to do like upper body workouts. I'm still going to get my steps in because I need to move. But she was still quite frustrated that she wouldn't be able to do it to the maximum. So first of all, I was impressed that she had like a plan in place. She was very positive. She was ready to like tackle it. But my second point was that actually in Commit to Six, you are in the best place ever. If like a challenge comes your way, because we are here to keep you on track. Like, we're not going to let you just be like, oh, well, fuck it, I'm just going to eat what I want and not train. We're still going to support you and be like, well, this is what you could do instead, or here's how you can adjust your calories or something like that. And second of all, we're setting you up with this massive challenge to adapt to any other challenges that happen in your life when you come up, because obviously Commit to Six, it's not a breeze. But if like it's just simple, plain sailing, normal life for 6 weeks, then maybe if something does come in future after you finish Commit to Six, you're not quite prepared for that challenge. But this is a really good time for this to happen. We can help you through this and then like bring you out the other side.
I've never needed a coach more than when I was going through a hell of a lot of my back. Like, it is the most important time to have someone. And it's kind of similar to when people are like, oh, I'm not going to do this round of Commit to Six because I've got a holiday for 3 days during it. And I'm like, you're never going to have 6 weeks where you have nothing on. Like, nothing. Come on. Like, the whole point is that we teach you how to live your, quote-unquote, best life while also getting results or also maintaining results. That's the whole point of the thing. It isn't so that you can avoid holidays. It's so that you can go on holiday, make good choices, and still get closer to your goals. Or it's so that you can go off and enjoy a holiday, not really stay on track, come back, get straight back on track, and realize that actually what you do on average consistently is what gets you results, not what you do for 3 days on holiday. Mm-hmm. But being able to get back into that mindset so you don't spiral into, oh, well, I've ruined it now, I may as well just continue. And then 4 months down the line, you start dieting again. And then you, again, I think it comes from this perfectionist mindset of, if I can't do everything right, I may as well do nothing. And it's why I hop on and on and on about imperfect action. But actually, if you can just do, even if you can't do everything, like, okay, let's say even you can't do any exercise for a while. In fact, we've got people who join this Commit to Six who are injured and can't exercise. But they're like, I'm going to stay on track with my nutrition and I'm going to do what I can and I'm going to be around positive and motivated people and I'm going to feel supported. And even things like tracking your pain, like a lot of check-ins I do, a lot, maybe there's like three injured clients I have. And a lot of the time we're tracking their pain levels. And that's quite useful as well. Like, it's something I've done with myself. Like, okay, what is actually triggering this? Because it's very easy just to get, like I've done this, where you just get really annoyed that you're in pain again, but you've not actually looked at why that might be. Similar with things like IBS, when people get really annoyed that they've got a flare-up, but they're not keeping track of what they're doing. So we can't see why that flare-up might be and how we can avoid that in the future. So yeah, like, use us. We know that like life is all about goals changing. So if halfway through this, unfortunately, you've got injured, or great news and you can get an injection in your back, but that means you're going to have a couple of days off, we can amend that plan. And if something like that happens in between check-ins, obviously just message us. Look, someone's just popped up. This is exactly why I joined. I needed help post-operation.
Yay!
I think a lot of the time post-op as well, it's about, and it might be the same for this person with the back injection, stopping people doing stuff. Like, a lot of the time that's what I did with Andy, and it was like, no, Emma, you've just had back surgery and you don't need to be doing more. Like, you need to be doing less. Stop being an idiot. And of course I know that, but I need someone external to almost validate the fact that the best thing for me to do today is not hit 10,000 steps. The best thing for me to do is stay below 5,000. And that seems opposite a lot of the time. But you need someone to reassure you that you're not being lazy. You're doing what's best for you at the moment. And at the moment, that's letting your body recover.
Yep. And Faye is, Faye specifically, she's a proper inspo. She's recovering from surgery, and she's like, I'm just reading her check-in just now, and she's got a question that's not relevant to this, but we'll go over. But yeah, she's doing really well with her own recovery, because she is aware that she can't like jump back into what she did before yet. She needs to build it back up and be patient and accept that her body needs time to heal. And that, again, is just like, she knows that, but as a coach, you just have to be like, yep, you're doing absolutely the right thing. Reassuring, like we said at the start.
It's the reassurance is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And it doesn't mean that just because it's taken a long time, you can't be back to your previous fitness and even more than you were before. Just got to take some time.
So I have some exciting news. I'm about to start working with like someone who's, I don't even know what you term him, but like kind of a bit of a pain specialist, I think. But it's so interesting. So I was really skeptical. Skeptical, not surprising. But basically, really good friend of mine and my old flatmate Claire kept trying to get me to go and see this person. I was like, I'm just not ready. Like, I'm not in the headspace. Whenever I even think about seeing anyone about my back, it makes me really upset. I don't want to see anyone. Like, I'm not ready. Stop pushing me. And then he sent me this video, and it was like, it's like a little presentation explaining a lot of things about pain and how like neural circuits work and how pain is so closely linked to fear, and that like it was really common for these two things to be linked, and so often as well, like, to give context, I've just had quite a bad flare up with my back, and my initial response was, I've slipped the disc again, it's not worked, that's it, done. When actually it could be like a whole load of things, that it might just be hopefully like a small thing. But he was saying that a lot of the time what's the quote? The tissue is not the issue. It's the like circuitry around that now, that whenever I feel anything in my lower back, I think that that's pain.
Right.
And pain is such a weird concept. I'll speak about this more like as I learn more about it. But if you think about what pain actually is and where it comes from, and we always think that pain is caused by an injury, and a lot of the time it's really not. It doesn't necessarily have to be that there's something wrong then. And so much of it is psychological. And I think a lot of people put a barrier up to that because they're like, no, my pain is real. And it's like, yeah, it's real. But it doesn't mean that there's a physical problem, which is great because it's probably easier to fix that like without surgery again. But it's such an interesting concept. And he showed me a study, and it compared two groups of people, one group that got physio, like traditional physio, for their back problem, and the other group that were told during the same time as the physio to read about how pain actually works within the body, and they experienced less pain than the group that got physio.
Wow.
Mad, right?
That is mad, yeah.
And that's in The Lancet, so it's like not just like some crappy journal that's like hippie journal, I don't know, like alternative medicine journal kind of thing. Like, it's really interesting, so I'm excited about that.
That is so exciting. Do you know what I was thinking about before we started recording, is that people can have a fixed mindset about growth and fixed mindsets. So even like, so I like,
oh, this is a paradox. Wait, okay, right, go.
Are you ready? Right, so I generally think of myself as like someone with an overall growth mindset, overall, right? But there's actually quite a lot of things in my life that I have fixed mindsets about. And I think of you as someone who has an overall growth mindset. However, you have a fixed mindset about the pain in your back, because you thought the pain in my back, slip this, that's it, that's mm-hmm. the problem. And you were refusing to see these other alternatives. Because, like, you're a really intelligent science-based... I didn't mean to do that, sorry.
You're really intelligent.
No finger quotes there. But, yeah, I just thought that was quite interesting. Like,
no, I think that happens a lot, is that you think you've got a growth mindset, but actually there's certain aspects where you don't, and you think things are fixed. And even now, like, I'm still learning loads and loads about growth mindsets. And even the fact that most things that we think are fixed aren't fixed either. Like, even our personalities.
No.
Like, everything is changeable. And sometimes that, like, overwhelms me a bit. And I'm like, oh, it's it's kind of scary that literally everything is changeable, but also it's so amazing that everything is changeable.
Yep. We're fluid, like water and gas. Well, that's not fluid, but you know, like constantly moving and evolving and changing. But that's really exciting that you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, awesome. One more really simple question. For me, I just really need help on the variations for using the bands at home. I don't have a very good imagination to think of different ways to do the exercise. For example, doing the face pulls, tricep extensions, as I don't have anything to wrap the band over in my house. Oh my God, this is, I totally identify this, right? So I shared the house with a man and he like attaches the band to the radiator. And I'm like, you can't do that because you can pull the radiator off the wall.
Yeah, not that, but there are loads of things. So like I often do, if I'm doing single arm rows or something, I will attach it to the bottom of the couch or to my bedpost.
People don't have like couches that work like that or bedposts that work like that.
But some people do, right? Oh, but I'm sure there's something, like I'm trying to think.
Right, so do you know, here's my take on it, right? Sit with your legs out in front of you, hook it round the end of your foot, and then pull from there.
But what is harder is overhead if you don't have anything.
Sit on it. Sit on the band.
Yeah. What are you attaching it to? No, sorry. Overhead, fine. I mean pulling down.
Oh.
From overhead. So she's talking about tricep extensions.
Yeah. What was she talking about? Face pulls and tricep extensions.
So face pull, you could still have that on your feet. Face pulls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But tricep feet, extensions. Oh, do you know what? I do tricep extensions off the door. Like, off open the door. So it's like sideways. And then both handles are there. Hook it round the top of the door, stand next to the door. Boom. That's what I do. Everyone's got a door.
Or if you've got a person, get them to hold the band or wrap it round them. Or you could use a towel so it's not going to like ping back and hit them in the face. There's another idea.
Oh no, do you remember at the start of lockdown I tried to get everyone to do towel rows? It was really scary.
What was it? I don't remember that.
Some way that you could hook a towel like behind the door, but it was dodgy as.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I think like I remember discussing this at the very start of lockdown. Like people were doing stupid workouts that were actually damaging the foundations of their house. Yeah. And I was like, it's not worth it. It's not that worth it. But yeah, like you can actually surprisingly use a band hook, like sitting on it or standing on it, or hooking it round a leg, or hooking it round another person.
And you can do a lot of them. Like if you're doing, even with this seated sort of like lat pull down kind of thing, again, just hook it round the door. Basically straddle the door and then pull down.
Love it. And they all feeling that like, post in the Commit to Six group, because do you know what? There's never a stupid question in the Commit to Six group. There'll be someone else that's like, actually, I'm really glad you asked that. And there's so many creative minds in that group. So ask and
you shall receive.
Oh, great. Great.
Great. Okay, I've got a question from a one-to-one actually. Okay. I was intrigued about the strength program and how it is programmed. I've never done solely a strength program before, so just interested in how it works. It's been odd having to do working sets of fewer and lighter reps than normal, especially for deadlifts. And it's been cool doing a couple of deadlift variations. Okay, so this I programmed like a full strength block, which means that you're not always working at maximum capacity. Now, with most of the training that actually this client, who I'm sure won't mind it, Sarah, had been programmed before, it was usually the sort of standard lift as heavy as you can for the given reps. And now I've taken her one rep maxes and I've taken percentages of them and given her different percentages to hit for given reps and sets per week, especially for the main lifts. And the reason behind that is that if you just push your muscle to the absolute maximum every time, you end up a like over fatiguing and not recovering as well and thus adapting as well, but b, your total volume over the week tends to reduce as well. And what you will notice is that, because you know the big lifts and the big strength lifts are squat, bench, deadlift, you're squatting, benching and deadlifts twice a week. So it's not just, oh, it's in there once. Like, we want to get good and strong at those movements, so they're in there more frequently, which is increasing the volume. But it also means that I don't want you lifting to absolute max all of the time. And there will be weeks, which I don't know if you've looked that far ahead in your program, but there will be weeks where you are lifting to max, but not at the moment. Don't know what you have to add on strength training. You obviously program a lot with CrossFit for strength. And it is very different than your standard hypertrophy gym workout.
Yeah. But I have also like programmed powerlifting type workouts as well, or type training as well. I have done so many strength programs over the years, and the only one that didn't work for me was the one I was I trained in weightlifting for a long time, for a whole year, and our coach, I'm pretty sure he just like made up like what we were doing each week, and we trained 4 times a week, and we squatted to failure, I would say 3 times a week, and I just got so injured. I never actually got stronger, really, and that just didn't work for me at all. I don't think that would really work for anyone.
Yeah, do you know what else about that is, if you're, and there's a really big difference here, that doing like, oh, leg press for 3 sets of 10 as heavy as you can to actually squatting to failure, that is mentally so fatiguing.
You're so right, because when you say squat to failure, that means that you cannot stand up and you have to chuck the bar off your back.
And also, like, when people, if we were doing this now and I was like, right, squat, we're going to do a set of squats fail, you'd be like, I need 5 minutes to think about this first. Like, you need to amp yourself up. Yeah. It seems ridiculous when you're saying it like this, but there's no way that you can just do that off the back of, it's not about the warm-up, it's about the psychology of it. Mm. You know that you're going to push your body, especially if it's anything over, like, a couple of reps. In fact, even the lower reps, like, your form has to be on point, you have to be in the right mindset. You don't want to give up when you're like, you know, just at a crucial point. Like, you have to be in the headspace to think that you're going to hit the reps that you want to hit. Mm. And it takes a while to get there. And to try and do that 3 times a week.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. The 17-year-old boys did great. Like, they were fine.
Yeah, but they could literally, what we were talking about before, like, they could do anything and get results. Like, totally. You're going through puberty, you're new to resistance training. You literally just look at a weight and you'll put on muscle.
Yeah, and they'd like drop a bar over their head and be like, whereas I'd be like, But yeah, that sounds like a really fun program that Sarah's following.
And I have to say, it is.
Yeah. Look, there is nothing more satisfying than like spending the time and making like a really fun program for someone and just knowing that they're going to love it. It's like, this is my special gift to you and I hope you enjoy it. Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah. And just to put this in perspective, so I think I've broken hers down into an 8-week block, but it's actually a 16-week block.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long it takes to build a significant amount of strength. Like, you're probably not going to see massive improvements. Like, we won't be testing her 1 rep max until 16 weeks. That's the kind of time scale it takes to build a significant amount of strength.
That's 4 months.
Especially when you're as strong as Sarah is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for some people, especially when you're new to resistance training, you'll put on 5 kilograms on your squat every week for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to, like, a certain level, you need some serious training in order to see big increases.
Yes. Sarah, in 16 weeks, you need to post in the Commit to Sex group. Let's see your max lifts.
Hell yeah. Okay, do we have any... Would you have a final question or are we...
One more. Shona and Emma, how do you stay so gorgeous and intelligent and talented? Great question.
Do you know what? I've been getting this question a lot in check-ins.
Me too.
It's probably been our most asked question.
Yeah. And I'm like, all I do is I just copy paste the same response. I'm like, here's the question again. It's just innate. It's built in me. I'm just naturally this beautiful, talented, intelligent.
I think it might be this vitamin water.
Oh, is that, your secret?
I think that's what it is for me.
Have
you know what? I think it might be the Commit to Six program. I'm not sure.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it is. I used to be a troll, and now, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Slightly less troll-like. But yeah. I have a massive knot in my hair, and I've just been to buy special kid shampoo that's meant for like detangling. Do you think that will work?
I think it needs to be brushed out.
Well, yeah, with the special shampoo. Like, I'm going to put that on.
Right, okay. So,
I've just been ignoring the problem. I'm like, if I can't see it at the back of my head, it's not
there. How big are we talking?
It's like a dreadlock.
Oh, no! Emma! Bad. Your hairdresser's going to kill you. Do you not brush your hair every day?
No, of course not. I hate brushing my hair. That's like my least favourite thing in the world.
You might have to cut it out and then have like a little baldy bit at the back of
your
head.
This is what I always ask her to do. I'm like, can you just cut it out? And she's like, no, you can't just cut it out. And I'm like, oh. Do you know what though? I seriously might have to cut my hair because it's too much. It's too much to look after. It's a lot of maintenance required.
Right, okay. So what we need to do is come up with like a short list of hairstyles for Emma. And then we'll have a vote on Instagram and we can vote what hairstyle she's gonna get. I vote like the Karen haircut, so like the little little fringe, side fringe at the front and then like spiky at the back.
Oh my god, do you remember when that was a thing?
Yeah, at high school.
But that's quite a lot of maintenance. Like you have to gel it up every day.
Yeah, gel, oh my god. Or a little pob. Remember a pob? Posh bob. Like long at the front, short at the back.
Yeah. I really don't think those would suit me.
Or we could just shave it all off, go for the Sinead O'Connor.
Then I could sell it.
Very low maintenance. Yeah. Well, they might not want to buy the big dreadlock, but they'll buy the rest.
Yeah, but once it's off my head and it's not linked to the pain in my scalp when people brush it, then they could brush it out and it'll be fine. It's good quality hair. It's better than buying it from India like yours.
Excuse me, I look after Angelica. That was something my hairdresser said. She was like, you need to brush it multiple times a day because she's like, she had someone come in like and spent all this money on getting hair extensions and then they just left it and had a big knot at the back of their head and she had to just cut it out. That was the old Emma, you don't want to get there. Try and brush it out.
Can you take yours out? No.
Take my extensions out?
Yeah.
No, they're glued. They're glued in.
Because if I could take my hair off to brush it, fine.
I think, could you get your mum to do it? Would your mum do it?
No.
Would Shelley do it? You're about to see Shelley.
Oh, Shelley would feel my pain because she's got hair.
Lots of hair as well. Right, so comment below.
I mean, I'm not sure we could socially distance while hairbrushing.
No,
that'll be right, my excuse. Oh, so sorry.
I couldn't brush my own hair. Emma, you are trying to get people to do 12,000 steps a day, eat fruit and veg every day, stick to calories, and you can't even brush your own hair.
Nobody's perfect, Shona. We all have our own weaknesses, okay? Right, I think I've been bullied enough.
I think you have.
At least my hairdresser's no longer on Commit to Six, so she can't get me in trouble.
I'm going to tell her.
Okay. Right, lots of love. Bye!
Bye!